The following is a Sunday feast lecture on Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 8, text number 15, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 20th, 2009, in Hamilton, New Zealand.
So today, at this auspicious gathering, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 8. Text number 15.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Mam Upecha Punarjanma. Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. Napnuvanti Mahatmana. Samsidim paramam gata.
Translation in prayer poet by the divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Prayer poet. Since this temporary material world is full of the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally he who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, does not wish to return. The supreme planet is described in Vedic literature as Vyakta and Akshara and Parama Gati. In other words, that planet is beyond our material vision, and it is inexplicable because it is the highest goal, the destination for the Mahatmas, great souls. The Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees and thus gradually develop devotional service in Krishna consciousness, and become so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets, nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. This verse specifically mentions the personless devotees of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. These devotees in Krishna consciousness achieve the highest perfection of life. In other words, they are the supreme souls. Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raguna Tanvita Dam Sajiva Sadaita
Zavadutam Purijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha. So, what's the point? Lord Krishna, the Supreme Authority, is describing very wonderfully to his disciple Arjuna what is the supreme destination. Saṃsiddhiṃ paramaṃ gataḥ. The highest perfection. You see? Siddhi is perfection. Paramam. Siddhi paramam. The topmost perfection. You see? There are many different types of perfections. If any of you have studied the yoga systems, there are many types of yogic perfections. There are what is called the ashta siddhis, the eight perfections. You can make yourself smaller than the smallest. That the yogi who is perfect, he can make himself small, so small he can pass through the wall. You see? He can pass right through the wall. Therefore, such yogis, you can never put them in prison. They can just come right through. You see? You can't ever hold them as a prisoner. And they have the power also, lagima siddhi. They can acquire anything from a distant place. They can go to the subtle platform and reach on the subtle platform a great distance to some gross object. They can bring it through the subtle. They can subtleize that gross thing, bring it through the subtle energy, and then make it gross again right here in your presence. You see, they could reach all the way. Prabhupada told someone that told him he was with one yogi in Calcutta. And this yogi reached all the way to Kashmir and he brought some fresh mangoes and brought them to the room, you see. That is called Lagima City. No, that is Prapti City, yes. Prapti City. And Lagima City, that is the becoming very light. It's like sometimes the yogis, they can... We've seen Lord Jesus, he had this perfection also, walking on the water, you see. Become very, very light. Actually, Christ went to India, you know. He learned from the yogis these cities. It's described in the Bible. I remember when I was a boy growing up in the Christian church. We didn't know what Christ did between the ages of 12 and 30. He disappeared from Israel for all those years. He actually went to India. There are other descriptions how Christ went to India. So Christ is actually a Vaishnava, you see. He is of the same religion as us. But he simply preached to the level of understanding of the Israeli people at that time, 2,000 years ago, whatever they could handle. In fact, he describes, I have more to tell you, but you're not ready to hear it yet. In the Bible, he says directly, I have more to tell you, you see. Whatever little bit, he told them they nailed him to a cross, so he didn't want to reveal too much more than that. That what he did tell them was so controversial, they nailed him to a cross, you see. But Christ actually was a full-fledged Vaishnava. He went to Puri, he saw the Rath Yatra, everything. He saw Jagannath, he had Jagannath Darshan. Actually, Prabhupada told us at the first Rath Yatra in San Francisco, he said because of the love between Christ and Jagannath, now Jagannath has come to the Christian world, you see. Because Christ had that love for Jagannath when he saw him in India, and now Jagannath is reciprocating by coming to the Christian world to give his mercy, you see. So there's actually only one perfection. Somebody just wrote me a letter today. They said, my mother told me that according to the Bhagavad Gita, if you change your religion, it's a sin. So how we can ask the Christian people and the Muslim people to chant Hare Krishna? We're asking him to sin. That was his question. Of course, if that was true, I'd be a sinner because I was born as a Christian. I'd be a very horrible sinner for chanting Hare Krishna. So I explained to this gentleman that actually that is not principle. It's not taught in the Bhagavad Gita. You see, the actual principle is religion is one. You see? Dharma or religion means Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma means the intrinsic nature of something. That's the real meaning of Dharma, the intrinsic nature of a thing. Just like, what is the Dharma of water? Liquidity. By nature, water is liquid. Now you can artificially change. You boys come and sit down here. This is not playtime. Come back and sit here and listen. Come on, come to the front. Come back to the front. Sit here and listen. This is not playtime. You can run after the lecture. This is time for education in your young age. You should become good student. You should hear this philosophy very nicely. Very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate your thank you for obeying my instruction. Yes. So, try to understand this point. What is the essential nature of water? Its essential nature is liquidity. It can be artificially made into ice by very cold temperatures. I mean, we're getting close to that here in this weather here. Not quite yet, thank God. All right, by heating, it can be made into a gas, you see. So water vapor and ice, they are not the natural, that is not the dharma of water. That is an adharmic condition of water, you see. To be vapor or ice is adharmic. But the dharmic condition of water is liquid, you see. So similarly, for every living being, there is the dharmic state and the adharmic state, you see. The dharmic state for the living being is to have a loving relationship with God, you see. And what does God mean? God means the source of our existence. Can any of you claim to be self-manifested? Can the atheistic scientist claim to be self-manifested? No. We are all the result of some cause, you see. And that cause has a cause. We have our parents on the material plane, on the material level, for crude example. We have this body anyway is caused by our parents. And that their bodies were caused by their parents. So you go back to father, the father, the father, the father, the father, the father. You keep going back. You understand? Until you come to that father who has no father. You see, that is God. So God means the source of all existence. You see? The atheist, he's putting forward an absurd idea that there is no source for existence. It's an absurd idea. Just like if I gave you a bag full of popcorn, and I said, this came out of nothing, would you believe me? No, to get popcorn, you take the popcorn kernels, you put them in the pot on the stove, and they poop, pop, 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 and they come out popcorn. You have that popcorn before? Popcorn. So, that popcorn, it comes out of the kernels, you see. It doesn't just pop out of nothing. So, the original kernel, so to speak, from which everything is popped, that is God. The original source of all existence, that is God. So, to have and the question is, why did God do this anyway? Why did he have all of us pop out of him to exist? Why are we here, you see? The reason we exist is the Supreme, of course, he is unlimited enjoyment. Enjoyment. He is called Atma Ram. He is self-enjoyer. But he expands from himself innumerable living entities for what purpose? To expand his own enjoyment by loving relationship. Why do parents have a lot of kids? Why does Chanakya Pandit say that the house without children is a desert? You see? So Krishna doesn't want to live alone in a desert. He could, just enjoying himself. Who would he play the flute for, you see? So he wouldn't even be a flute, actually, if he was all of them, because the flute's a living entity. So anyway, Krishna, he expands all of these devotees from himself, and all these living beings are actually all devotees, from himself for the purpose of having unlimited loving relationships. And are these clones? Are all these different living entities, they're simply clones? You know, here's a jiva, now we'll clone this jiva, you know, 10 billion times. No, they're not clones. Are snowflakes, do you have snow here sometimes? Rarely? If you look at the snowflakes under a microscope, you will see that no two snowflakes are the same. Every snowflake is unique. That by nature's way, there can be millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions and quintillions and sextillions and octillions and go on and on and on, zillions and zillions of snowflakes, and you will see that every single snowflake, come here and sit in the front. Yes, you sit right here. You're our student of honor tonight. You sit right here and take in this wisdom. Drink it through your ears into your heart, and you'll become a self-realized soul in a few years if you will come regularly and hear these lectures. See, these children, why do I emphasize the children? They have better brains than we do, you see. A little baby, he can learn two or three languages by the time he's 5 years old without having to crack one textbook, you understand? These children have very, very fertile brains. So therefore, when I give lectures, I insist all the children should sit and hear. It's not romper room time. When I give lecture, or anyone gives lecture, this is the time for the children to sit and absorb the knowledge through the ears. And if you do that, you'll be amazed how they talk philosophy. There's a little boy in my town. When I go on my morning walk, he comes running out the door to join me, and he asks me philosophical questions on the entire walk. At the age of 3, he was preaching philosophy and quoting verses to back up his philosophical points at 3 years old, you see. Just because his father brought him to every lecture, actually he was coming every morning for Bhagavatam class. The father brought him every lecture and made the son sit and hear on the lap. Keep him there on the lap, make sure he hears. Because if these children, their brains are so powerful right now, if boys and girls both, if they will hear these lectures, they will get absorbed and tune in, you'll be amazed. They'll ask better questions than you do during the lectures, philosophical questions. You'll be proud of your kids. If you let them, you bring them and let them plug into this Vedic wisdom coming from Bhagavad Gita, you'll be amazed at the transformation. You'll be proud of them. You'll be real proud of them. When you take them to India and show them off to your family, everybody, the whole family will be impressed, you see. So let these kids hear. It's a great opportunity for them to advance in Krishna consciousness. They can run and play after the lecture. There's plenty of time. But now's the time. Sit down and hear. Okay. So we were talking about Dharma. And we were talking about the supreme source of existence, the supreme person, emanating from himself all these countless numbers of living beings for the purpose of enjoying a loving relationship with them. Just like the parents like to have a loving relationship with their children, the supreme parent, Krishna or God, he wants to have a loving relationship with each and every one of his children. So we are his children. So if we are actually to fulfill the purpose of our existence, then we are meant to have a loving relationship with that supreme person. Well, how to do that? I mean, with your parents, it's pretty easy. You're living in the same house with them. You know, you try to do some nice service, try to please them. What about that supreme father? You can't see him right now. You know, how are you going to do that with him? Well, he's told us how. It's called the Bhagavad Gita. If you simply study this Bhagavad Gita and apply, try to follow the instructions given here, you will be absolutely amazed at the transformation of your consciousness. So anyway, when this person, the way I answered this person, when they asked, the mother said, if it's sinful to change a religion, I explained that actually religion is one. God has unlimited names, you see. God is unlimited. That's the meaning of God. Therefore, God has unlimited names. I know my father, he was called different things. My mom called him one thing. His old college buddies called him something else. His boss called him something else. I called him something else. He had many different names according to relationships. So the Supreme Father of all existence, if my father in this world have three or four different names, then God can have unlimited names, you see. So the great Vaishnava Acharyas have accepted all the different names for God according to scriptures. Even we accept the names from other scriptures outside of our Vedic tradition. Even the Bible and the Quran, we can accept these as authorized names according to our Acharyas, you see. So the real point is to become an actual lover of God. That's the point. We don't care what name people chant. They want to chant Allah, Jehovah, Christ, Krishna, Buddha. We have no objection. But let them actually develop love for the Supreme Person, you see. Instead of approaching God, give me this, give me that. Just like, what is that song? Give me a Cadillac, a brand new Cadillac, replete with Michelin tires. Give my wife a new silk sari. Give my kids a Harvard education. Give me a house by the sea. Om Jaya Jagadish Hari. You see? We're approaching God. Give me this, give me that. Like, you know, like Santa Claus, you know. I got my Christmas list. This is what I want, God. Now you be good and you give me what I want. You see? That means we're loving the things that we want God to give us more than we're loving God. You understand? Now, God may give you those things according to your karma. You may get those things. But you know what you're not going to get? You're not going to get God's personal association. He'll keep you at a distance because you don't really want Him. You just want those trinkets, you see. You want your little toys, you know. Even they say the things that the adults go after are toys. There was one poster. It says, "He who dies with the most toys wins." Showed some man he had his Mercedes, he had his mansion, his swimming pool, he had his Learjet. The man who dies with the most toys wins. So these are also toys. The children have attachment to their toys, and we adults, we have our toys also. You know, a big bank account. This is one of our. These are just toys. We're like children with toys. The real thing is, we have to develop a loving relationship with the Supreme Person. Because that's the only thing you can take with you when you leave your body. Of course, we're all going to leave our bodies, right? Is anybody going to stay around forever in this body? Nope, we're not. So why should we invest all of our energy simply in this body? Does it make sense? I mean, it's just plain, sorry to say, but stupid. It's plain stupid to put all of our energy into this body and everything related with this body when it's going to be finished anyway. Why not invest at least a reasonable amount of your energy in that portion of your existence which is eternal? You see? The soul, the Atma. So, in this Krishna consciousness movement, we are being guided by the greatest spiritual masters in the history of the universe, beginning with Krishna, coming down to Brahma, to Narad Muni, Veda Vyas, Madhvacharya, all the greatest acharyas, and confirmed by the great Mahajana as well. You may know the great Mahajanas. Svayambhur Nadadashambhu, Kumara Kapilo Manu, Janako Pralado Janako Bhishmo, Balir Vyasakirviyam. These great acharyas also confirm it. These are the great Mahajanas. Svayambhur is Brahmaji. Svayambhur Narada Muni. Shambhu is Shiva, Lord Shiva. Svayambhur Narada Shambhu. Kumara, the four Kumaras, beginning with Sanat Kumara. Svayambhur Narada Shambhu. Kumara Kapila Muni. Kumara Kapilo Manu. Svayambhuva Manu. Prahlad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Prahlado Janako Bhishma, Balir, Bali Maharaj, Vyasakir, Shukadeva Goswami, and Vayam, Lord Yamaraj. So, these great Mahajanas, these great authorities who are accepted all throughout Indian culture as the greatest authorities, they all confirm these teachings which have come from Krishna, have come down through Lord Brahma, and all the great Vaishnava acharyas. They are confirmed by all these great Mahajanas. how to come out of the adharmic state of consciousness to the dharmic state of consciousness. In other words, don't be don't be gas or don't be ice, be water, innocent. Come to your natural state of consciousness. Right now, we are in an unnatural state of consciousness. And what is that unnatural state of consciousness? I am this body. We are thinking, yes, I am male, I am female. In this way, we are identifying, you see. I'm a little kid, I'm an old senior citizen. We're identifying with all these bodies, you know. I am Gujarati. I'm an Aussie. I'm a Kiwi. I'm an American. This is all bodily identification. You see, it's bodily identification. Do you realize you've been every single body according to the Vedic scriptures? We understood that everybody in this room has been through 8,400,000 different species of life again and again and again and again. You were a monkey. Do you know that? You were a monkey. Yes, you were a monkey. You were an alligator. Do you know that? You were an alligator. Yes. We've been trees. We've been mosquitoes. We've even been kangaroos hopping around. You see, we've been everything. But now we've come through this evolutionary cycle. Now we've come to this human life. This is a golden, why is it golden? Platinum opportunity. This is a platinum opportunity to get out of the cycle, to regain our eternal svarup in the spiritual world. Each and every one of us is an eternal associate of that Supreme Person, the source of all existence, but we forgot about it. It's like being the son of Bill Gates, you know, and being a beggar in the street. I will work for food. In America now, we have beggars. I don't know what they do, but in America they have signs, "We'll work for food." Actually, they don't want to work. They just want the food. They're out there begging in the streetlights in America now, you see. What if some beggar, actually it happened one time in Dallas, in a very, in a middle-class neighborhood, upscale middle-class neighborhood, one wealthy man went for a walk one day and he got hit with amnesia while he was out for a walk. Something happened in his brain. And he forgot who he was. He forgot where he lived. He forgot everything. He wandered the streets of Dallas for weeks and weeks as a beggar, trying to survive on the street because he didn't know who he was. He didn't know where he lived, nothing. But then one day, of course, everybody was looking for him. Like, where is he? Where did John go? What happened to him? Was he kidnapped? Did he commit suicide? Was he murdered? Nobody knew. But then one day one of his friends drove by and they saw him and said, "John, hop in the car. We've been looking for you. What's going on?" They took him home. They took him to a psychiatrist. They did some procedures and helped him, you know. They have procedures for people suffering from amnesia to regain their memory. So they did all these, amnesia recovery, and it worked. He remembered who he was. He remembered who his wife was, his kids. It all came back, you see. So you know what? Do you know that you're suffering from amnesia right now? You are wandering in the cycle of birth and death like that man wandering the streets of Dallas, Texas, trying to somehow survive in this material world. But actually, you are an eternal associate, a dearmost child of the Supreme Person, the source of all existence, who has unlimited opulence, unlimited control, unlimited wealth, the supreme, all-powerful personality of Godhead. It was unlimited power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. You see? You are the dearmost child of that Supreme Person. So why are we suffering here? Simply it's because of this amnesia. So just as the psychiatrists have techniques for the recovery of amnesia victims, Krishna, who is the supreme original psychiatrist, he has his amnesia recovery technique, and it's called the yoga system. And there are different ways of recovering your identity. You see, there's the Jnana yoga system, there's the Ashtanga yoga system, there's Hatha yoga, Kundalini yoga. There's many different types of yoga systems, but there's one specific system for this age of Kali. In this age of Kali, Prayanelpa yusha shabya kalavasmin yuge yanaha mandasu. You know the verse? Mandasu manna matayo madhya bhagya hupradrutaha. Oh, learned one in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are lazy, quarrelsome, unlucky, and above all, their minds are agitated like anything. You see. So what to do for this age? Krishna has given a very powerful, special amnesia recovery technique for this age called the Bhakti Yoga System. Where instead of sitting down and doing all this kind of stuff, you know, for 10,000 years or 100,000, actually it takes 100,000 years. It took Valmiki Muni 60,000 years through this kind of stuff, you know. Can you imagine sitting there and deep breathing for 60,000 years? I mean, even 60 minutes? Who's prepared to sit for 60 minutes and do deep breathing in today's fast track society? Who can even do this? There's one hand went up. Oh, 60 minutes you do a pranayama every day? Okay. So anyway, but he doesn't have a job either. Yeah. Where is 60 minutes or 60 hours or 60 days or 60 months or 60 years? What does it speak of 60,000 years for doing that system to recover your identity? So therefore, Krishna has given a special program for the modern society, the modern day world. You see, it's Bhakti Yoga System. And it's described in detail in the Bhagavad Gita, comparing it with the other types of yoga systems. Krishna says at the end of chapter 6, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena taratmana shudavan vajate yomang same yotatamo mataha. He says of all the yogis, you see, all those who are trying to recover their identity by linking. Yoga means link, you see. Yoke, link. All the different systems of recovering the identity, this bhakti yoga system, of all the yogis, the one who is most intimately connected with me in linking or in yoga, that is the bhakti yogi. So here at this temple, we are disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, who is the preeminent bhakti yogi in the modern age. He is the preeminent bhakti yogi. He has created thousands of bhakti yogis all over the world, and He has dispatched us all over the world to create thousands and millions of bhakti yogis everywhere to save people from the suffering of material existence. So we want all of you to become bhakti yogis. If you're not already doing that, we like you, and that means devotees of God. We want you all to become devotees of the Supreme Person and try to develop your love for Him. Instead of praying to the Lord, give me this, give me that, you pray, and as a devotee prays, and my dear Lord, please bless me that I can become fully surrendered unto you. You may say, but if I do that, how am I going to get my money? If I don't worship the demigods for this thing and that thing, you know, Amba Mata or Shiva, if I don't do all this puja, how am I going to get what I need? Well, guess what? Everything ultimately comes from Krishna. Eko Bahonam, as confirmed in the Katha Upanishad. Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahonam, Yo Vedadati Kamam. That one Supreme Eternal amongst the plural Eternals, that one supreme conscious being amongst the plural conscious beings is the supplier. Eko, that one, yo vidadati kaman, he gives all the necessities to everyone. So instead of having to go here and beg for this, beg for that, you see, you simply go to the Supreme Person and say, my dear Lord, I'm begging you to please engage me purely in your service. Do you think you'll be missing out if you do that? How many times do your kids have to say, Mommy and Daddy, will you feed me today? Did you have to ever beg your parents, they feed you today? He never did. Who's the parent? He's confirmed that he never had to beg you for food. That means you're a very good father. Thank you very much. The kid never had to beg for food. So do you think God is not as good a father as this wonderful gentleman here? He's any less of a father than this wonderful gentleman? So why do we have to say, God, please give me my daily chapatis? You see? Is it necessary to pray to God? No. In fact, Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Ananyashchintayanto mam ye jana paryapasate tesham nityavayuktamam yogache mam vahamyaham. He says that for those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I give them everything they need and I protect whatever they've got. In fact, Prabhupada elaborated on this. He said, Krishna says, whatever you need, I personally deliver it to your front door. So Krishna will give you whatever you need, whatever food, whatever money, whatever, you know, everything. Krishna will provide everything to who? For those who worship him with exclusive devotion. So when we're begging God, give me this, give me that, give me, give me, give me. Who are we cheating? Think about it. Who are we cheating when we go to God with our shopping list of a million and one things we want? When I was a kid, my parents taught me, I was called Stevie then, little Stevie. They said, Stevie, you should pray to God for cowboy boots. They were made from leather, oh my God. They had me pray to God for cowboy boots. And sure enough, for Christmas. Sure enough, on Christmas Day, there was my cowboy boots under the tree, you see. My parents wanted to teach me how to believe in God. So they wanted me to pray to God. They made sure every day I prayed to God for my cowboy boots. You see how I was trained in the wrong way? I was trained in the wrong way. My parents meant well. I have all respect for them. I love them very much. They were wonderful parents. But in spite of meaning well, they didn't have the proper understanding of the science of God. It was good they taught me to believe in God, and I'm indebted to them for that. But they didn't have the highest understanding I got from my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. You see? You don't approach God, give me this, give me that. You're cheating us. We cheat ourselves when we do that. When we approach God and say, please give me bhakti, please give me devotion, then everything will come. You see? Instead of trying to amass wealth, women, and followers like everyone's after in this world, you see, just try to develop bhakti. Because by developing bhakti, then that person who owns everything, who controls everything, he becomes our personal supplier. So you don't need to have, $10 billion if that person who owns all the wealth gives you whatever money you need. You don't need $10 billion to be secure, you see. All you need is to have a pure loving relationship with that Supreme Person who's the source of all existence. And then everything you need, that makes you virtually the owner of the whole world, actually. When you become totally sold out to Krishna, Krishna becomes totally sold out to you. That person who owns and controls everything becomes sold out to you to whatever degree you're sold out to him. So when you're totally sold out to Krishna, you become the virtual owner of the entire world. That's a fact. So the devotee doesn't have to worry about anything material. Doesn't mean you quit your job. You do your duty. But you understand that everything is coming by the mercy of Krishna. You see, I'm not being maintained by, whatever the companies are over here. ANZ Bank or whatever. I'm being maintained by Krishna. Did you ever sit down with a stack of New Zealand bills and make salad and eat it? No. No. Put a little salad dressing, little lemon juice, a little olive oil, some salt and pepper, and eat a bowl full of New Zealand dollars? No. You can't digest that. A cow might be able to do that, but we can't do that. The eatables that sustain us, they are all given by God. They're not given by the government. They're not given by a factory. They're not given by a company. Everything that we need to sustain us is directly given to us by God. vegetables, fruits, dairy products, even the meat eaters are depending on God for all of their sustenance. So why we should sell our souls to this material civilization? Doesn't make sense. We should voluntarily give ourselves to Krishna. That is called bhakti. Sarva dharman padit yaja mami kang shalang vaja ahang plang sarva pape vyo mokshya shami mashu chaha. One should give up all other considerations and simply take devotion to Krishna as the purpose of one's existence. That will make you a perfect father, perfect mother, a perfect son, a perfect daughter, a perfect brother, a perfect sister, a perfect employee, perfect teacher, whatever you are. If you surrender to Krishna, a perfect businessman, a perfect employee. Whatever you are, if you surrender to Krishna, you'll become perfect in that thing. If you're a songwriter, you become a perfect songwriter, a dancer, a political leader. Whatever you are, if you surrender to Krishna, you'll become perfect in that. You'll become absolutely perfect in that thing. So there's no loss by surrendering to Krishna. You will gain everything by surrendering to Krishna, who's the source. You become the perfect servant of all the demigods also, you see. Because they are all, according to Rig Veda, all the demigods are looking to Krishna or Vishnu, the Supreme. Om tad Vishnu paramang param sada pashyanti suryodaviya chaksharatatam. Rig Veda confirms all the demigods are looking to Vishnu or Krishna as the Supreme. So if we will target our devotion to that Supreme Person that the demigods are also targeting their devotion to, then we will be the best servant of the demigods also. They will shower all benediction as they are empowered to by the Supreme Person. They will give us all benediction. You see. So the point is, everything is covered by surrendering to Krishna. Everything is covered. Everyone is pleased. And ultimately you'll please all living entities throughout all of existence by fully giving yourself to Krishna. You'll give the best service to all living entities. The poor people, the rich people, the middle income people, the animals, the plants, everything. When you surrender to Krishna, you give the best service to everybody. That's a fact. So I'm very happy. My wife and I are very happy to be here today with all of you wonderful, wonderful devotees. And I can ask now if there's any questions. But I suggest that you hear the question. I'm somewhat deaf now with old age, so you may have to help me by repeating the question. So now's your chance. Very good.
Kashmir.
Yes, what about that? What question do you have about that? It's called Prapti Siddhi. Okay. Yes, Prapti Siddhi. The yogi, he can reach to a distant place and he can bring something here. He can go through the subtle platform and take some gross object from a distance, pull it through the subtle platform and then make it gross again here. See, there's a subtle platform. So he can take his hand and go into the subtle plane with his hand and extend it thousands of miles, take that thing on the gross plane and bring it back to the subtle plane to the gross plane again. Yeah. Would you like to learn to do that?
I just thought there was more to it. I think it was related to Prabhupada. Someone came to Prabhupada and did that.
There was one popular yogi in India. He was giving gold watches to people. You see? But they found a nearby jewelry store, somebody was burglarizing it. He was actually reaching into that, he wasn't pulling him out of thin air, he was reaching into the nearby jewelry store through Prapti Siddhi. He was stealing all the watches from the jewelry store and giving him out gold watches. And he must be God. You see? He just had some Prapti Siddhi and the poor jewelers were going broke because that yogi was stealing all their watches. Any other questions?
The ultimate goal in life is to reach Krishna, right?
The ultimate goal in life is to reach Krishna.
However, if everyone did that, there wouldn't be any humans on planet Earth. How does it plan for that?
If everybody did attain Krishna, then there would be no one left here.
Oh.
No humans.
Well, the environment would certainly get cleaned up. That's one thing. Give it a few hundred years and the environment would become absolutely pristine again, you see.
I'm not talking about the environment, I'm talking about people. The ultimate goal in life after so many thousands of years of evolution, the ultimate purpose in life is to become a human being and reach to Krishna again, or Godhead. After the process, there won't be any souls or ultimate supreme beings on earth. What's a plan?
What would happen, therefore, if everybody decided to go back home, back to Godhead?
Actually, because the living entities possess free will, you see, there's a vast spiritual existence. This is just one little tiny corner of the vast spiritual existence. And because the free will is there, even if all the living entities, the plants and animals are also living entities just like us. They just have that body right now according to their karma. They'll become human beings too in due course of time. But let's say every single living entity here in this material world went back to home, back to Godhead. There would still be others coming down here to check out being independent from the Lord, to see if they would like to try to be independent from the Lord. And they'll also realize it was a foolish mistake, and they'll also go back. But there will always be living entities. It's like, what happens if the government had a wonderful program of education? They educated all the people so there was no criminals anymore. What would you do with the prisons? You see. But the thing is, there's always going to be a certain percentage of the population who are going to be criminally minded. It's just the nature of reality. So there's always going to be a certain number of living entities. Even if everybody here now becomes reformed, there will still be others who will come along in the future who want to try, you know, being an independent enjoyer and see if they can pull it off. Actually, we can't pull it off. The only way we can really enjoy is to satisfy the Supreme Person. But there's always that foolish child who wants to stick his hand in the fire, even though the parents warned him. There'll always be foolish children, not in every family, but, you know, percentage-wise, out of 1,000 children, there'll always be some children who are so foolish they want to stick their hand in the fire and see what it's like. So we've stuck our hand in the fire right now. Now we got burned. Now we have to get back. And there'll be others who will make the same mistake in the future, even if we go back. Does that answer your question? Are you satisfied? Okay, go ahead.
Talking hypothetically.
Okay.
So, I mean, your example of putting finger into the fire, that's fine. That's what we'll be doing right now. But I'm saying that what happens after we all go back to God, what happens to planet Earth?
If we go, there will be replacements for us. Other people will come along who try to be independent of the Lord, they will come here. So it's never going to be emptied out. Even if we all get reformed, there'll be other people to occupy the prison. In the future, that's a fact. It's never going to be totally empty down. But even if it were, what is the loss? What would be the loss if we were all back in the spiritual world and nobody was interested in the material world? What would be the loss? It'd be like a prison where they had the government had to shut down the prison or turn it into a university or something like that. What would be the loss if that happened? You see? Would there be any loss? Would there be any loss if everyone went back to the spiritual world and there was no more a place where people were murdering and robbing and raping?
Do you think planet Earth would become Mars? Do you think planet Earth might become Mars?
The thing is, what actually happens is that the whole material universes, all the material universes destroyed every time that Mahavishnu inhales. If you really want to go into the details of Vedic cosmology, I'll tell you. But then the vast spiritual sky, Lord Mahavishnu lies down in one corner in what is known as the causal ocean. And in that, he goes into what is called yoga nidra, or mystic slumber. In that yoga nidra, when he is sleeping, and when every time he exhales, countless numbers of universes come from his breathing and from the pores of his skin. And in every one of those universes, he further expands as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, lying down the bottom half of the universe, in an ocean known as the Garbhadak Ocean. And he further expands within every atom, and between every atom is Shiradakshay Vishnu. So from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Lord Brahma is born. For each universe, there's a Brahmaji. And that Brahmaji, then he is engaged in the activity of creating all the planets and all the populations. That's Brahmaji's creation work, you see. He's the engineer hired, you know, the hired engineer, as it were, by Lord Vishnu to do all the creation work. So then when Mahavishnu inhales, all of those planets and universes withdrawn back into him, and all the living entities who were there in the material world, they go into a state of suspended animation until the next exhalation when all the universes are remanifested. So the earth that we see it now is just a temporary manifestation in between the exhalation and inhalation of Mahavishnu. The souls, however, are eternal. The earth, this universe, is not. It's just here for the time period between the exhalation and the exhalation is 311 trillion years, approximately. There's a period of 311 trillion years between the exhalation and the inhalation. So the whole thing is going to be dissolved anyway when Mahavishnu inhales. So there's no sense worrying about it. Oh my God, what's going to happen to Auckland? What's going to happen to Hamilton? Oh my goodness. You don't have to worry about it. The whole thing is going to be annihilated anyway. But you won't be, you see. All the living entities that populate this material, they will not be. Even the plants and the animals, they will not be annihilated. Those who became fully Krishna conscious, they'll be back in the spiritual world with the Supreme Person. Those who weren't, they will remain in the cycle of birth and death, going through manifestation and non-manifestation in the exhalation and inhalation periods. And they will get a chance to meet a bona fide spiritual master, and he will give them the Vedic wisdom. And if they take advantage of his words of wisdom and follow his instructions, then they will get out of the cycle. And those who meet the spiritual master but don't take advantage, well, they have to stick around until they finally learn how to take advantage of his instructions, you see. So it's the duty of the spiritual masters to travel and preach all over the world, and also all the devotees. It's like Abhicharan Prabhu here. You see, learned brahmanas, they are also spiritual masters. They are our siksha gurus, you see. They teach us and they guide us how to qualify ourselves to get out of the cycle of birth and death. Then we can learn how to take advantage of them, you see, and we can finish up in this one lifetime. But if otherwise we remain here and going through these manifestations and non-manifestations of the earthly planet in millions and billions of universes. There are similar planets in other universes also. This is just one universe out of millions and billions of universes. Did that answer your question? Do you still need more? I'll be happy to spend the whole evening talking with you. I appreciate your nice questions.
I have a question.
All right, here's a question from this side. That's another point. Vishnu Priya Maharaji has made a nice point that actually, even if all the human beings go back to Godhead through the evolutionary cycle, you see, they come, it's not Darwinian evolution, but through birth and death, the living entities come up from the aquatics, the plants and animals, the insects and reptiles, then they come up to the birds and the beasts and the human beings. So there's a natural progression, evolutionary progression from the lower species to the higher species. Perhaps you have studied in the Vishnu Purana, Jalajana Valakshani, Stavara Lakshavinshati, Krimaya Rudra Sankhyaka Pakshinam Dashalakshanam, Trangsha Lakshani Vashavaha, Chatur Lakshani Manashaha. It is described there how there are 8,400,000 species. They are given in the order of evolution, beginning with the aquatics, 900,000, then going to the plants, the 2 million, and then going up to the worms and reptiles, 1,100,000, then up to the birds. Maybe it was one, I got the number wrong on that second one. Then the birds, you get, I think it's 2 million. The beasts, I know there's 3 million. The human beings, 400,000. So there is a set pattern of evolving from the lower to the higher species until you finally reach the human form. So there will be people coming from the animal kingdom direct and becoming human beings. You may be surprised to hear there's 400,000 different species of humans. We don't see them all on this planet. Here we might, Prabhupada said there might be 200 varieties on this planet. If you consider all the subtleties, you know, like the Maoris are here. Isn't the Maoris you call them? Yeah. The Aborigines in Australia, you have the whites, the blacks, you know, you have the Orientals. You might be able to squeeze out, Prabhupada said maybe 200 on this planet. That leaves another, 380,000 on other planets throughout the universe, different human types of humans, So science fiction is not that far off the mark about, beings in outer space. There are 380,000 approximately different varieties of human beings situated throughout the universe and other planets. That's an interesting point. Okay, so, yeah.
The question that probably raised about, about this big loud enough
I have my amplifier here anyway.
Question that Prabhupada raised on a minute ago about obtaining salvation or meeting Krishna on a massive basis.
Well, what did he just say?
Meeting Krishna on a massive basis.
Massive basis, and everybody's going back to Krishna. But that's not hypothetically possible. Krishna gives a clear thumbs up in the Bhagavad Gita. And one of the verses, I think it's in chapter 4, and he says, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam tatpara samyatendriya. Somebody's got to be Shraddhavan, somebody's got to be tatpara, somebody's got to be jitendriya. There are three suttas someone has to make. And in all of the three yogas, which he talks about, Sankhya Yoga, Karma Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga, he repeatedly talks about Nirmamo Nirhankara Sashanti Marigachati. Somebody's got to become Nirmamo, somebody's got to become Nirhankara. They have to give up Mamata, they have to give up Ahankara, Ego. And that's not all possible for all jivas.
So is there a question?
Unless Krishna wants it.
So tell me what he's asking, I can't quite hear.
Well, the question is, it's not simply possible. Do you think it's possible that everybody is going to meet Krishna?
Ultimately,
is it possible that everybody will go back to Godhead?
Ultimately, that's how.
Ultimately, it's actually Srila Prabhupada explains in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya book. He said it is the destiny of every single living entity is to go back to home, back to Godhead. So eventually everyone will go, but only when they surrender. But eventually everyone will go. But there'll be new ones taking their place. And ultimately, every living entity will go back. Prabhupada said that in teachings of Lord Chaitanya. The destiny of every living entity is to go back to home, back to Godhead. How long it'll take, though? How many millions and trillions of eons it's going to take? That's another matter.
And then there's another thing in the Gita. Krishna says it's actually Arjuna. When Krishna asked him in the last 18th chapter, I can't remember the verse. He talks about how his moha has gone away.
What is it?
And in the last shloka, he talks about the attachment. To
is that microphone working?
Yeah, that's working. Attachment to the world, whether that's gone or not. Krishna asked Arjuna in the last chapter, which is chapter 18. And Arjuna answers, Nashto moha smriti labda tvatparasadhan. Arjuna lays emphasis that it is only by the grace of the Lord.
Only by what?
Only by the grace of the Lord.
Yeah. That's right.
So meeting Krishna is not possible by the jiva only or through the guru. It has to be the grace of the Lord itself as well.
He's saying that it's not possible to meet the Lord just through the guru or the jiva. It's by the grace of the Lord.
Only by the grace of Krishna, yes. Only by His kindness. But that grace is delivered by the spiritual master also. Spiritual master is the one who delivers the mercy of Krishna. He doesn't bring his own mercy. What is the water that extinguishes the blazing fire? That's the water from the ocean. It evaporates into the cloud, and the cloud is simply delivering it. The cloud doesn't manufacture the water. That is given by the ocean. So the spiritual master doesn't bring his own mercy. He's simply the delivery man for Krishna's mercy. So it's ultimately Krishna's mercy that delivers everyone. But the spiritual master is given credit because he delivers the mercy. Therefore we say it is his mercy. It's his mercy to deliver the mercy of Krishna.
Then that the Krishna's grace is the spiritual master's.
By Krishna's grace, you get a spiritual master, and by Guru's grace, you get Krishna. It's combined mercy. That's why it is stated, Brahmanda Brahmite Konna Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Lata Bij. By the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, you see, that living entity was wandering in the cycle of birth and through the Brahmanda, up and down the Brahmanda, you see. The one living entity, Konna Bhagyavan Jeev, one living entity who is indeed fortunate, who gets that combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, he gets what? Bhakti Lata Bij. He gets the seed of bhakti planted in his heart.
But Krishna is also the Jagat Guru. If you go back to your Guru, then back to his Guru.
Krishna is also the Jagat Guru.
Of course. Krishna is Jagat Guru. That's a fact. And the... And that devotee who purely reverences him, he is also Jagat Guru. He's non-different from Krishna in that sense, because he is the empowered agent of Krishna. Actually, if someone thinks, well, I will just be a devotee of Krishna because he's Jagat Guru, it's all by his mercy, but, all right, then just be a devotee of Krishna, but then really be a devotee of Krishna. And what does Krishna say in the Adi Purana? Ye me bhakta jana parata, na me bhaktashte janaha. Mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas teme bhakta tamamata. The one who is my devotee, he's not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee, you see. So if you say it's just Krishna, it's all his mercy, he's Jagat Guru, I'll just be a devotee of Krishna. All right, then be the real devotee by following his order. He orders you to become the devotee of his devotee. If you're not the devotee of the devotee of Krishna, Krishna says you're not my devotee. You understand? You have to be the devotee of the devotee, otherwise you're simply a bluffer. Krishna will never accept your bluff. You become the devotee of the devotee, then Krishna says you're my devotee. Otherwise, na me bhaktas, he says, in Sanskrit language. Any other questions? Yes. Oh, yes. Children are preferred here. Go ahead.
Why can't
mums or dads feed their children?
Why can't mums and dads feed their children?
Why can't they?
Can't they?
Cannot.
Yeah.
Actually, it may appear that your mommy and daddy are feeding you, but actually Krishna is the one who's really feeding you, because he gives them the food to feed you. They are simply delivering the food that Krishna is giving. So Krishna is the one who is actually feeding you. But you should respect your mommy and daddy because they are Krishna's representatives. You have, actually, according to Shastra, you should every day bow down to your mommy and daddy. You offer your obeisances at their feet every day. That's described in the Bhagavad Gita. The austerity of the body is to offer respectful obeisances to one's mother and father. So you children, every day when you see your parents, you should bow, first thing in the morning, you should bow down at their feet and offer your respectful obeisances.
Why dad is a god? Because he works in the
Her father is our pujari.
Yes, and the question is?
She was just making the comment that her father is like God.
Yes, the one who is a devotee of God, he is... The one who is purely serving God, he is like God. He's because he is God's representative. Yes, he is like God in that sense. Yes,
that's true.
That's true. Huh? That's him.
Yeah.
Right. My basin is to your feet. Okay. Any other questions? Come on, more questions in the back there. Come on, everyone. Yes.
You have to be the devotee of God's devotee, otherwise
yes.
Krishna won't accept.
That's right.
This is like, so you're saying you have to have a master?
Yes, absolutely. You have to have a guru, that's right. Without a guru, in India, you all are from India, you know better than me, but I've also seen in India those street dogs. Oh, the Indian street dogs, the most pathetic creatures in the world, isn't it? But I have also been on Juhu Beach in Mumbai, and those dogs on Juhu Beach walking with the masters, with those, you know, all the wealthy businessmen and the movie stars, when they walk their dogs on Juhu Beach, those dogs are stout and strong and very jolly dogs. So Prabhupada says there are two type of dog, anatta and sadnatta. The dog who has no master, he's in a pathetic condition. The dog who has master, he's very nicely situated. So the person who has guru, he is sanata. He has no guru, he is anatta, you see. Without guru, we are simply street dog. And with guru, we are very nicely situated, you see. So everyone, not blindly, whimsically, but you take the time, study the science of bhakti, and find out a bona fide spiritual master, surrender to him, and then you become very nicely situated, you see. Dog with a master. These beads we wear, this is our dog collar, you see. I am Prabhupada's dog, you see. This is a sign that I am the dog of Prabhupada. This is my dog collar, you see.
But God is going to take care of both the dogs, irrespective of the one who's more flashy and the one who's...
God is going to take care of both dogs, irrespective of one being flashy and one not having
yes.
any master.
Krishna takes care of both, yes. And then what's the...
who would you define as the real master?
Who would you define as the real master?
The real master is Krishna, and those who represent him purely, they are also the real master. They're both real master. Just like you, some of you work for, when you work for a company, who is your real boss? It's the owner of the company, right? But can you tell your manager, you're not really my boss, I'm not going to do what you say? You'll be out of that company immediately, you see. Because your immediate supervisor, he must also be given respect as my real boss. Even though he's not really the real boss, he's an employee also like you. So you have to respect your manager as your real boss, otherwise you're out. The same thing with Krishna. If you don't respect the spiritual master as his empowered representative, he says, Name bhaktascha yajana. You're not my devotee. He directly states,
two things. One is respecting and the other is following everything they say?
Yeah. So it could be there are different masters in the world. So you listen to all of them and you try to grasp what they are saying, but maybe you do not follow them like in routine, or you're not actually under one particular master. So in that case, is God not going to consider you?
So what's the question?
So the question again is, do you have to have be under one particular devotee of God to be the actual devotee of God?
You actually...
Or can you just get the real understanding?
No, unless you fully surrender to one master, then actually you keep taking your own mind as the master. Well, I take a little here, a little there, and I concoct my own idea of what I should do. Unless you actually fully surrender to one master, you're not really surrendered to any masters. You have to find one master who purely represents God, that you can put complete faith in him. If you don't find such a person, then don't surrender. But if you find a master who purely represents God, you see, that's what we require. That's what we require. Otherwise, you're taking your own mind as the guru. Well, I'll take a little here, a little there, a little here. I'll mix up my own blend. Then you're taking your own mind as the guru. You're not really surrendering to guru. You have to find a spiritual master you can completely surrender to. You see? Unless you're a devotee, unless you're a completely sold out devotee of the bona fide spiritual master, Krishna doesn't accept you as his devotee. That's a fact.
So
said in Gita?
Is that said in Gita?
The Adi Purana. Krishna is speaking to Arjuna in the Adi Purana. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, we don't speak according to imagination. We speak according to Shastra. Yes. Yeah, tad Bhagavad Gita, tad vidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam gyaninas tatvatarachinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master, inquire from him submissively and surrender yourself unto him, render service unto him, you see. Krishna is telling you, you have to become the servant of his representative, the spiritual master. That means you surrender yourself unto him. What did he say? What's he saying?
He's saying that it's in the plural.
Yeah.
And you should go to the Gyanis.
That's right. Yes, it is stated in the plural. That's a them. And the second half is plural. Because the spiritual master is not. When you are surrendering to him, you're actually surrendering to all of the, you're accepting the authority of all the predecessor acharyas. You see, just like I become disciple of Prabhupada, that means I'm not only taking Prabhupada as authority, I'm taking all the predecessor acharyas also. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, you see, Jagannath Das Babaji, Baladev Vijabhushana, Narottam Das Thakur. So yes, when you, that's the great beauty of when you actually surrender to a bona fide spiritual master. You get not only his mercy, but you get all the mercy of all the great acharyas, the mahajanas, you see. You get all of that mercy. That's a fact.
Isn't that true? Krishna only said to him, that's what my understanding from reading this. Arjuna says to Krishna, "Na yotse di govindam." Lord Krishna, I will not fight.
Arjuna says to Krishna, I will not fight.
No.
Despite the fact that he surrendered himself when he says, Shadi mam tvam prapannam, in one of the slokas.
Despite the fact that he has surrendered to Krishna.
That's right. And Krishna then says... No.
Arjuna was not in a surrendered state when he said he shall not fail. No.
Yeah, that's right. That's
before he surrendered... He was saying, I shall not fight, and then after he surrendered, he fought. After he surrendered to Krishna, then he fought the battle. In the unsurrendered state, he was not going to fight. In his surrendered state, then he would fight. You understand?
But then when he comes to Krishna, he wants Krishna to be his guru, but Krishna never wanted him as a disciple.
Hmm?
He didn't want to become a guru.
Arjuna wanted Krishna to be his guru, but Krishna didn't want to be his guru?
Guru, that's right. Krishna wanted him to be his brother or Sakha. That's what he says. But
no, Krishna accepted him as in his mood of disciple. That's why he instructed him, you must surrender.
But he never disavowed him.
He ordered him. Sarva dharman pudit jaja, ma me kang shadanang raja, ahang pangsarva bhapevyo, mokshyashami ma shushaha. He ordered him, now this is the final, this is the ultimate instruction, you fully surrender to me. That is disciple. Krishna did take position of guru, you see. That friendship rasa, that is there. But when Arjuna tried to be the friend of Krishna, he was bewildered. He was crying, he was weeping like a wimp on the chariot, dropping his bow and arrow in his mood of being Krishna's buddy, you see. The buddy-buddy relationship was put aside. And he became the surrendered disciple. Now I'm your disciple, and is so surrendered unto you, please instruct me. And Arjuna and Krishna did take the role of guru by instructing him. He asked Krishna, now I want to be your disciple. I want you to instruct me. And Krishna reciprocated by giving the whole Bhagavad Gita. You cannot say that Krishna didn't take the role of guru. He did. The whole Bhagavad Gita is the proof. Gita, guru instructs the disciple. He gives the whole Bhagavad Gita instructions. You cannot say Krishna didn't take the role of guru. The Bhagavad Gita is the proof. He took the role of guru and instructed him. And Arjuna took that instruction. He surrendered himself. That's a fact. That is history. The whole Bhagavad Gita is reference. The whole Gita is reference. Krishna took the position of guru, instructed Arjuna, and Arjuna surrendered. The whole Gita is proof. What do you mean there's no reference? The whole Bhagavad Gita is proof. No, that's you can look. It's right here in the Sanskrit. It's a fact. Krishna took the role of guru by instructing Arjuna, and Arjuna surrendered.
Where is that particular sloka?
The proof is right here, Bhagavad Gita. Take it or leave it.
That's my proof as well.
The Bhagavad Gita is proof. Take it or leave it. That's all I can say. If you don't want to take it, no. Just like Krishna told Arjuna, now I've given you the instructions, you can take it or leave it. So you can also take it or leave it. It's your choice. No one's forcing you. If you don't want to take this, you don't have to. But the Bhagavad Gita is the proof. You can take it or leave it. If you choose to leave it, that's all right. We're still your friend. You're still your well-wisher. We love you. We still love you. Whether you want to take it or not, we still love you. We think you're wonderful. But the fact is that Krishna did take the role of guru by instructing Arjuna. Arjuna begged him, I want to be your disciple. Please instruct me. And Krishna reciprocated by giving the whole Bhagavad Gita. That's a friend.
Krishna always treated him as a friend, no more than that.
Krishna always treated him as a friend, no more than that.
That's not a fact. That's not a fact. That's not a fact. Krishna took the role of guru. When does a friend say, now you surrender to me? When does a friend say, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mame Kang Shadang Vraja? Abandon all varieties of religion and fully surrender unto me. When does a friend say that to a friend? Does anybody have an experience or their friend says, now you must surrender to me? A friend doesn't say that. The guru says that. That's not friend. Just like a Bhaicharan, he's my friend. I never told him he has to surrender. Did I ever tell you have to surrender to me? No. A friend doesn't say surrender to me. Friends say, okay, let's both surrender to each other. You know, we're buddies. But the spiritual master, he takes the role of now you must surrender to me. That is guru. So you've misunderstood what is guru. I can tell you that. You've misunderstood. Okay, now it's her turn.
Someone else's question. There are people who are waiting for that question.
Yeah, let's pass it around. We can have a meeting later on, but I'm going to tie everybody up. Anybody else have any questions? Yes.
Krishna says, unless one is devotee, he cannot understand Bhagavad Gita on a scholarly basis. Could you explain on that?
Yes, Krishna says that one has to be a devotee. That's a fact. Any other questions? Yes.
Yes, we say that we all have individual souls.
Yes.
And at the same time, we say that we are part and parcel of Krishna.
Yes.
And in Gita, there's a mention that Nanam Chindanti Shastrani, Nanam Dehati Pava, about the Atma, that you can't cut or burn or dry the Atma. So could you please elaborate how we are individual, at the same time we are part and parcel also?
Yes, that's a very nice question. How is it that while we are part and parcel of the Lord, in that sense, qualitatively one with Him, how is it that we have individuality? The way that works is that Krishna is supremely independent. That quality of independence is fully manifested in Him. He's totally free to do anything He wants. He's under no constraints whatsoever. He can do anything within our conception or beyond our conception. That's His power. Since we are part and parcel of Him, and we are qualitatively one with Him, therefore we also possess that quality of independence. We can act according to what pleases Him, or we can act not according to what pleases Him. That's our individuality. You see, we have the choice to be surrendered to Krishna or not surrendered to Krishna. So because we share the being one with him, we have the quality, and he is independent, and therefore we are also independent. Therefore we have also individuality because of our independence. It's like your children have the independence to obey you or disobey you. That's their independence, their individuality. Because Krishna is the supreme individual, and we are part of him. Therefore, the quality of individuality exists within us as well. Just like an ocean, the chemical composition of the Pacific Ocean and the chemical composition of one drop of Pacific Ocean water is the same. So Krishna is the ocean and we are the drop. So the quality of individuality is possessed by us as well, but in a minute degree, that's all.
Yes, so going by the same example, like you gave of the water drop has the same qualities like of an ocean, and we individual souls also have the same or similar quality to a limited extent of that of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so when we go back to the backward or the goal of Vrindavan,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We remain separate.
That's right.
We still remain individuals.
That's right.
But going by the example, like in the water, when it mixes water,
yeah,
the tattva of water is all one.
No, no. Not if you look on the minute level. You see, the individual water molecules always remain individual water molecules. You're not looking closely enough. Your example breaks down because if you look at the individual water molecules, they're still individual water molecules. You know, they're sitting in the big ocean. You put that drop back into the ocean, they're still individual water molecules.
So, but we call it like one ocean, right? I mean, I understand that it's an individual molecule.
But you know that the impersonalists like to use this example of a drop of water merging in the ocean. But does that ocean remain in the water after it merges? That's my question. Does it? Does the water remain in the ocean after it merges? Yes or no?
I don't know.
It doesn't because it evaporates and comes to the land again. What remains in the ocean are the aquatics. The water itself is being recycled between the water and the land and the ocean constantly through the evaporation and the raining process. So the living entities who want to merge into the ocean, Bhagavatam says, Aruya Krishchena Parang Padam Padapadantyato Nadyoshadushma Dangriyaha. They come back again to material existence. But those living entities who become like the aquatics, you see, they remain in the ocean. Those are the devotees. The impersonalists temporarily merge into the ocean, they fly in the Brahman sky until they burn off their pious activities which qualified them to enter into Brahman, and then they come back to the material realm again to enjoy and suffer the pangs of material existence. But those who become the devotees, they become like the aquatics in the spiritual sky, in the ocean of Krishna. They remain eternally there as individuals serving the supreme fish, Krishna. You know, it's an analogy I make. So if you want to stay in the ocean, don't try to merge like a drop. Go in like a fish. Keep your individuality. Be a devotee. That's how you actually stay in the ocean of the spiritual sky, by being a devotee, not by being an impersonal.
I understand that point, but just to elaborate further on the same example of water.
Okay.
Like when the Ganga flows from the mountains.
The what?
When the Ganga.
Oh, the Ganga, okay.
It flows from the mountains, and it's called Ganga till the time it merges into the ocean.
Bay of Bengal, yeah.
Yes. Right. And then once it merges, you can't tell it's Ganga.
Then we call it Bay of Bengal, yeah.
Yeah, it
changes its name,
particular
yeah.
Ocean.
That's right.
So it loses its identity.
That's right. Yes.
So.
That's right.
But
then that water evaporates and comes back again to the land. So the impersonalists don't remain in the ocean. They don't remain in the spiritual sky. They go in there temporarily and they come back again. Just like many years ago when I was a brahmachari in our Dallas temple, there was when we got a call from the prison. There was one inmate was being released, giving a special Sunday afternoon pass to come to the Sunday love feast of the temple. So I drove out and picked him up, brought him to the temple. He enjoyed the program. He got prasadam, and I drove him back to the prison that night. So he was out on a weekend pass, you see, a temporary pass from the prison. So those, the impersonalists, they have a temporary pass to enter the spiritual world. But then after they're, then they have to come back to the prison again. So you want to remain out of the prison, yet to become a devotee. Then you're permanently released from the prison. Impersonalists just have a temporary pass to enter the spiritual sky for a short while and then come back again. That's their position, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Patanti adho, they fall down again.
Getting a bit late, but just one more point. Okay, that was an example about the water. Okay, let's take sky example. Sky.
Let's take sky as
sky,
example.
Okay.
Okay, now sky is like inside this also.
Right.
Okay,
inside ether, this, yeah. Etherical element, right.
This hole also, and it's everywhere.
That's right.
Right? But mm-hmm. It's the same thing. It's sky everywhere.
Yes, yes.
Right? But
it's all pervading. Yeah, the sky element is all pervading, yes.
Pervading.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, when we say that Krishna is all pervading,
mm-hmm.
and Atma is all pervading, how? I mean, it's just an analogy, I know. I mean, Atma is a more deeper subject than the sky itself, okay?
Right.
But sort of trying to draw an analogy.
Okay, so what's the question?
The question is like, when you break this, okay, it becomes one sky. If you break this hole,
right.
The sky still remains there.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So same way, we have soul inside us, right? When we leave this body.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Drawing up from the same example, should it become with one with the one supreme? Which is
yeah, so one particle of ether, you see. Krishna is the source of the ether. That is an element emanating from him. You see? So if even the Atma is a particle, then that particleness quality must also exist within ether. It must be particles of ether. Okay, any other questions?
What is the ultimate goal for Krishna?
Enjoy. he doesn't have to go to work on Monday morning.
If that's the case, why mm-hmm. is it what there should be a process if he's so powerful he can have amnesty for all the people. Why doesn't he do that?
He's so powerful, he should give amnesty for all the people.
He has. He has given amnesty. He has. He already has done them. But you just have to, they're not taking it. That's the problem. As Lord Chaitanya, he's given amnesty to everyone, but they're saying, no, I don't want it. I'm proud. I don't want the amnesty. Krishna has given amnesty. As Lord Chaitanya, he's giving amnesty to everyone. Come. Re-enter my eternal pastimes in the spiritual sky. They say, no, thank you. I am God. So we thank you all very much. It's been a very enlivening. This is one of the most enlivening group I've ever given the lecture to. I'm so nice to have these enlivening, challenging questions. This is great. I got to come back here more often. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.